In 1913, British explorer Sir Ernest Shackleton needed to hire a crew for his ship for an upcoming expedition to the South Pole. He posted an ad, so the story goes, in the London Times. And the ad read, "Men wanted for hazardous journey. Low wages, bitter cold, long hours of complete darkness, safe return doubtful. Honor and recognition in case of success." What do you think the response was to this ad? Carl says, "No way." No? Men lined up. He filled that boat in no time. He filled this boat up, and this has been studied as an advertisement, short, and yet powerful and effective. What's going on here? What are we reading about here? We're reading about three parts of this ad: a sense of mission, an explanation of the challenges, and a promise of reward. In some ways, our Christian calling is not different than that. In some ways, it has all of those elements. Let's explore that. Sense of mission. What is our mission? Your mission, should you choose to accept it, and many of you have, it seems ridiculous to respond to this ad, yet so many did. Follow me is the call that we talked about in Acts 2:38, that calling that comes in some variation to all of us, or we wouldn't be here, either through our parents or grandparents or in a first generation way to us for the first time. We responded to a call. It seems a little bit different, challenging. That sense of mission. So what is our mission? Where do we find it? Let's turn to Matthew 6. Matthew 6 is a gospel of Jesus Christ. This portion is in red letters, implying that Christ spoke these words. This is a part of the Sermon on the Mount. So it's very early in his ministry. And he's saying to them, verse 25, we can pick it up, "Don't worry about your life, what you'll eat or what you'll drink or any of these things. The body, isn't life more than food or clothing?" Well, you know, a lot of people worry about that. We've got to put food on our back and food in the cupboard, right? Or clothes on our back and food in the cupboard. Verse 31, don't worry about those things. Don't worry about that at all. He says in verse 33, "Seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all of these other things will be added to you." That's the mission. Don't worry about tomorrow. Tomorrow will worry about its own things, for sufficient for today is its own trouble. So we're called to this mission. Now, by the way, that doesn't imply that we shouldn't plan. That doesn't imply we should be careless, right? We do have to, but this is our mission. Matthew 28:19, we get another variation of this mission. Matthew 28, the very last words of Matthew here, and they're in red letters as well. "Go, therefore, and make disciples of all the nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all things that I've commanded you. And lo, I will be with you even to the very end of the age." And that chapter is concluded with an amen. So let it be. So we have a mission. This is what we should be doing. And we have, is the seal on there? The seal of the United Church, right? Preparing a people, preaching the gospel, making disciples of the nation. That's an iteration on this Matthew 28:19. That's what the church is all about. That's what we're here to do, is to be a church led by God's Spirit. We read about or explored the Spirit last time. Led by God's Spirit to do this, to preach the word, to make more students. We are students, and we're here to make more students. That's our mission. Will there be challenges along the way? Did God ever say, "You would just obey me and I'll take care of everything for you. You won't have any more problems. It will all go away. It'll be easy street. It'll be like driving in the carpool lane with nobody else in it," right? All that traffic. And there was a little traffic today, right? You don't have to worry about any of that because you obey me. I take care of all your problems. Did God ever say that? No. Yeah, I mean, it's almost humorous, right? When we think about even the trials and the challenges and the opportunities to grow and the lessons to learn that this congregation has had. And all of us have had. When we start telling the stories, we all have stories, right? We all have a story. He never said it was going to be easy. Never. In fact, let's read what the word says. Let's turn over to Mark. Mark 13:13. Says, let me ask you this. Does it say, now that you have the truth, you go share the truth and everyone's going to be so excited to hear what you have to say? Does it work like that? No. In fact, Jesus is, if we really catch the context of it, we can go a little earlier in Mark. It's saying, watch out for yourselves, for they will deliver you up to councils. You'll be beaten in the synagogues. You'll be brought before rulers and kings for my sake. The gospel, the good news, must be first preached to all the nations. We read about Stephen, and we didn't read the rest of the story. Stephen was stoned right after that section that we read in Acts. Right? He was put to death. God did not save him. It says here that these things are going to happen. The gospel must be first preached, and they will arrest you and deliver you up. But don't worry. Don't even worry what you'll have to say, because the Spirit will help you in that day. This sounds like a hazardous journey, though. Brother will betray brother to death. Father, his child. Children will rise up against parents and cause them to be put to death. And you will be hated by all men for my name's sake. But he who endures to the end will be saved. Do you know what the name of Sir Ernest Shackleton's ship was that he sailed toward the South Pole? They didn't make it. Take a guess. The Endurance. The Endurance. There's a picture of it stuck in the ice. Interestingly enough, the ship did get stuck in the ice. They did have to abandon ship into the lifeboats. That also did freeze up. They ended up on, I believe it was South Georgia Island, and then they realized they were all going to die there because they were way outside of shipping lanes or anything. So then Ernest Shackleton got in another one of those lifeboats, took a few men with him, and rowed to a place where they could get help. It was like another day or two journey with the last of their food, and they came back. Amazingly, miraculously, not one of those men were lost. They were gone for 2 years, 28 of them, not one lost. That was a hazardous journey. You will be hated by all men's sake. We also have a hazardous journey. Matthew 10. Verse 16. Behold, I see you out. I send you out as sheep in the midst of wolves. Sheep in the midst of wolves. Probably that sheep has a nervous look in their eye, right? That's not a comfortable place to be. Therefore, be wise as serpents and harmless as doves. But beware of men, for they will deliver you up to councils. They'll take you to court. They'll try you, find you guilty, scourge you in their synagogues. Christ went through all of this. You will be brought before governors and kings before my sake as a testimony to them. But when they deliver you up, don't worry about what you'll say, for it will be given you in that hour what you should speak. Now that's, of course, as we prepare ourselves and we study and we learn the words that we should speak. John, we'll turn over to John. Now notice what we're doing. We've gone through Matthew, we've gone to Mark, now we're headed to John. These words are remembered, and Luke, by the way, has stories like this as well. There are parts of the gospel story, because Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John all tell the story of Christ, but from their perspectives. So there are parts that each of them remembered a little differently, and parts that are included in one that aren't included in others. And there are some things that all of them remembered. And this is one of them, that you will be hated by all people for his sake. That was clear to them. John 15 and verse 18. If the world hates you, know that it hated me before it hated you. If you were of this world, the world would love its own. So when you blend in, you don't stand out, and it's no problem. But when you stand for something, when you stand for God's truth, when you have a value set that's very different from the world, that's noticeable. Your light shines. You're the salt of the earth. If you're not that, then the salt loses its flavor. Then what is salt without flavor? Useless. It's dirt. It's nothing, right? So we're expected to be different. And salt analogy, there's just a little bit of it as a percentage. If you're of the world will love its own, but because you're not of the world, I chose you out of the world. Therefore, remember, the world hates you. Remember the word I said to you. A servant is not greater than its master, his master. If they persecuted me, they will also persecute you. If they kept my word, they would keep yours also. But all these things they'll do to you for my name's sake, because they don't know God who sent me. So he's saying that it's going to be a hazardous journey. This is an explanation of the challenges. Matthew 5, we go back to Matthew 5, and it says in verse 10, blessed are they when you're persecuted. Blessed are you. So God's not going to forget this. He went through this for us, and there is an expectation that we may have to go through that. Let's turn over to Romans, rather. We talked about Romans 6, in the first message, and baptism in Romans 6. And so in Romans 7, Paul is talking about this Christian life now being dead to sin and yet alive to God. And that when we share God's truths, it may not be well received by all, and they may not like it, and they may not like us because we share that message. So there's that is a challenge. And then there's also the challenge that we face with our own internal battles, right? That this is also a challenge, that we have our old man to deal with, gender nonspecific. We put that, as we talked about baptism, right? We put that old person under the grave and it comes back up. Is that old person still fighting to come back? Still working, constantly working, and that's what Paul is talking about in Romans 7. So we read in verse 6, and that would be some homework to go back and read that. And here we go in verse 18. I know that in me, that is in my flesh, nothing good dwells, for to will is present in me. I want to do these things, but how to do that, I can't find it. Sometimes I just can't find it. I know what I want to do, but I don't always do it. For the good that I will to do, I don't do. The evil that I don't want to do, that I practice. Now, if I do what I will not to do, it's no longer me or I who do it, but sin that dwells in me. He's constantly trying to get rid of that old man. I find in this law, in verse 21, that evil is present with me, the one that wills to do good. For I delight in the law of God according to the inward man, but I see another law in my members, warring against the law of my mind, and bringing me into captivity to the law which is in my members. O wretched man that I am, who will deliver me from this body of death? I thank God through Jesus Christ our Lord, so that with the mind I myself serve the law of God, but with the flesh the law of sin. So while we are physical, we have a battle to fight. Ephesians 6 is that battle against physical things? Principalities, powers, rulers of the darkness of this age. Satan is good at what he does. So you're signing up for a battle. You're signing up when you go to those baptism waters. You're signing up for a challenge. It's not always a comfortable journey. Is there a promise of reward? Yeah, the third part here. Let's look at the promise of the reward. Let's turn over to Hebrews 11. First of all, how do you know there's a promise of a reward? Karen? Because God said so. Well, okay. Who is this God you speak of? Who is this God and why should we obey him? So he says so. Well, Hebrews 11 says that first of all, we have to believe in that. By faith, we believe in that. So faith is critical. We have to believe this. Without faith, nothing that we're talking about makes any sense. It's, frankly, ridiculous to think that we would become uncomfortable for any reason. Our instincts would say, don't do that. That's why we have pain, right? It tells us to stop doing whatever it is we're doing. Right? If our knee hurts, stop doing those things that make it hurt. If we touch something and it burns or it's pokey, don't do that anymore. Now, some of us are slow learners, and we do things that cause things to break. So when a couple of times I play basketball, right, and I get injured. And one time, I was on the basketball court, winter family weekend, and that left leg just stopped working. It felt like somebody had hit me on the back of the leg with a tennis racket or something. And so I looked at the ref, and I said, are you going to call that? And he says, call what? I don't know, somebody hit me or something. And I look at the guy that's defending me, and I said, well, did you do something? He says, I didn't touch you. Are you okay? I don't think so. I can't. That doesn't move. So they walk me off the court, and I go and I sit on the bench, and I look at one foot, and then I try to do the same thing to the other. It just doesn't work. Doesn't work. So then I call a friend who's a physical therapist. Rick, this is what's going on. He says, does it hurt? No. Ooh, that's bad. Why do you always say that? He said, why do you say that's bad if it doesn't hurt? He says, because pain tells you to stop doing something. So if it's a sprain or a twist or something like that, then you'll have a lot of pain, which is a good thing because it tells you to be careful of that area and it will heal. When there's no pain, it's just broken. It's gone. And it was. The Achilles was totally severed. Right? So it never hurt. That's the good news. And it works again. That's also good news. That's another story. I don't even know how we got there. But the point is, there's pain. There can be pain. Wow, we got way off track. Where'd you take us? Without faith, verse 6, Hebrews 11, 6. Without faith, it is impossible to please him. For he who comes to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. This is fundamental. You have to believe that God is, and that he's a rewarder. Like this promise of reward. Without that, none of this makes sense. Hebrews 11, 13. Now, as we go through Hebrews 11 and Hebrews 12, it's like this hall of fame of all these that have gone before us, right? And we're reading about each of these players. Has anybody gone to the the pit and seen a basketball game? UNM? You've been there. So UNM has a pretty spirited home arena, if I understand correctly. I haven't been there, but I understand that it's pretty exciting to go to a game there. One of the most exciting in all of basketball anywhere, college basketball. So there's this excitement in there, and I bet that in that gym there are jerseys hanging up, right? And maybe number 44 is hanging in the rafters, and nobody wears number 44. Why? Because the greatest ever wore that jersey, and nobody else gets that number again, right? So we're, as we read Hebrews 11, it's almost like reading or looking at the jerseys and reading these stories. These are the greats. We have Noah in verse 7. We have Abraham in verse 8. We have Sarah in verse 11. If we go into chapter 12, we have Joseph. We have Moses. Or that's the latter part of 11. All of these greats. Why did they do this? Why did they do the things that they do? Why did Noah build a boat for 100 plus years while everybody made fun of him? That wasn't fun. Because he believed God and his promises. He believed that something that had never happened before, didn't even seem possible, would happen. We've been given promises that seem pretty fantastic ourselves, right? They seem like fantasy world. That 22% that's left doesn't make sense. You read Revelation, scary for one, and then there are these promises of this great new future, and you think, how could that even be? How could a city come out of the sky, and what does that even mean? We go into the feast and we learn about these things. What does it mean? Verse 13, did the people who had gone through this, did they receive the promises? No. They didn't. They didn't get the promise yet. They lived their entire life, sometimes in challenge, sometimes ending badly, in a tough spot that gets worse. Right? Stephen got stoned. These all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them from afar off, were assured of them. They had belief. They confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on this earth. They were on a journey through a foreign land where they didn't feel like it was their home turf. Has anybody ever lived in a different city? And then you move to a whole new place. It doesn't feel like yours for a while. Even moving to a whole, like a different house, you might feel like you're living in a hotel or something. It's not, it doesn't feel right until some time. These folks, they say, live their entire life as pilgrims and sojourners, not feeling like it was their home territory. And if they had called to mind that which they had left, they had opportunity to return. We could always go back and readopt those old values. We could let the old man live in us. We could give up the battle that Paul talked about. And yet what then happens? But these all died in faith, knowing that they could go back, but they looked forward to the reward. And it was that reward that meant so much to them. Shackleton didn't actually reach the South Pole. He didn't get there because his boat got stuck in the ice, and actually a Norwegian ended up on another expedition beating him there. But he did ultimately lead another mission, and he had an exciting time there. Let's read about what we should be doing in chapter 12. It says, let us lay aside every weight. I'm back in Hebrews. And the sin which so easily ensnares us. And let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith. So while we haven't received the promises, one has. Jesus has been resurrected. We read about that in 1 Corinthians 15. And he's the firstborn among many brethren. And it's that that we look to. Because if we look to the hazards that we're going through now, it's totally different. Let's continue to look in Hebrews 11 and see what some of these folks went through. Because it's encouraging that as we see the challenges they went through, then we look at our own lives and we see the challenges that we have been through, are going through, or will go through, and we might see it in a different light. we might understand it differently. We might feel that God hasn't forgotten who we are, and that he does care, and that he is with us on our journey. And we read about Moses in verse 23, who, when he became of age, refused to be called son of Pharaoh's daughter. We read about that. Choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God rather than enjoy the passing pleasures of sin, being a prince of Egypt. By faith, he forsook Egypt. By faith, Israel passed through the Red Sea as on dry land, and the Egyptians trying to do so were drowned. By faith, Jericho's walls fell. And what more shall I say in verse 32? For time would fail us. We don't even have enough time to go through all of these others. Gideon and Barak and Samson and David and Samuel, who through faith subdued kingdoms, worked righteousness, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions, quenched violence, escaped the edge of the sword, out of weakness were made strong, became valiant in battle, turned to flight the armies of aliens. Women received their dead raised to life again. Lions didn't eat them. They went into furnaces and weren't burned. Some of them. Others, and sometimes the same ones, later, let's keep going. Others were tortured, not accepting deliverance that they might obtain a better resurrection. Others had trials of mockings and scourgings and of chains and imprisonment. They were stoned. They were sawn in two. They were tempted. They were slain with the sword. They wandered about in sheepskins and goatskins, being destitute. They were homeless, you might say, afflicted, tormented, of whom the world was not worthy. So while they were going through all that, God saw them differently. They wandered in deserts and mountains and dens and caves of the earth. And all of these, having obtained a good testimony through faith, did not receive the promise. In this life, they did not receive it. God having provided something better for us. In verse 7 of chapter 12, if you endure chastening and correction, God deals with you as sons. So sometimes it's correction that we go through. Sometimes it's trials as a result of obedience and other people. We've read about these different things. Now, no chastening, verse 11 of chapter 12, seems to be joyful for the present. This time of year is a good time to remind ourselves of this, because while the weather is becoming beautiful, sometimes the thought process that we go through at this time of year can be, frankly, heavy and depressing. When we realize that we may have come a long ways, but we still have a ways to go, and that old man sometimes wins a few battles. And we start to assess. We're getting rid of all the leavening out of our cabinets and our cars and our house and the couch. And we're trying to get rid of it in our lives, and we realize, ooh, there's a little bit in there. Something we shouldn't have. Let's try to get rid of that. Let's try to represent the fruits of the Spirit more. Let's try to represent what we're given in Colossians as characteristics. Let's just go there for fun. We've got a little time. Let's go to Colossians. Colossians 3. It might be good to write this out at this time. It's talking about putting off the old man. Colossians 3 and verse 5 describes the old man. Put these things to death. Get these out of your spiritual cabinet. Fornication, uncleanness, passion, evil desire, covetousness, which is idolatry. Because of these things, the wrath of God is coming on sons of disobedience. At one time, that's the way we lived. But now we're putting that off. Put off anger, wrath, malice, blasphemy, filthy language. Get rid of all those. When we read the ingredients, those are the things that we don't want. Verse 12, therefore, as the elect of God, holy, which we know means set apart, sanctified, consecrated, set apart for a special purpose. He's saying, you are holy. You are set apart. You as people are also set apart. We talked about days being set apart, but you as a people are set apart. You are holy. As the elect of God, the future members of his family, you're set apart as holy. So put on these things. These are the the characteristics that should describe us as God's people. And they're very different. Tender mercies, kindness, humility, meekness, long-suffering, bearing with one another, forgiving one another. If anyone has a complaint against another, think about this. He says, even as Christ forgave you, you're guilty of Christ's death. Remember that when you're mad at someone else, that you're just as guilty of that death. Whatever they've done is not as bad as what we've done, or it's the same. So we remember that. And when we do, it gives us the right frame of mind. And what kind of frame of mind is that? We might call it an unleavened frame of mind. It's flat. It's humble. It's got that proper perspective. So do these things. And above all those, put on love, which is the bond of perfection. So that's what we're doing in this journey. 1 Corinthians 2, in verse 9, let's turn over there. Talks about the fact that we're learning these things. Eye has not seen, nor ear heard, nor have entered into the heart of man the things which God has prepared for those who love him. So God has something amazing in store for us. He's quoting Isaiah here, and it's reiterated in the New Testament by Paul, saying that there is something amazing in store for us. And that's what we gather in the fall and think about, the Feast of Tabernacles. And God reveals these things to us through his Spirit. And we talked about that last time, about the Spirit of God and the Spirit of man and how they work together to give us an understanding. And because of that, we can see and we believe God, and we believe that he has promises for us, and we believe that there will be a reward for those who go on this Christian journey. So I've taken the liberty of rewriting this ad a little bit. Let's see how you feel about this. Christian soldiers wanted for hazardous lifestyle. Sacrifice necessary of time, talent, and treasure. Relationships may be challenging, persecution possible, potential risk of death. Reward unimaginable in case of success. Let's look forward to that reward.